Thank you very much.
Can you hear me?
No.
Maybe I should set up with us. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Okay, so thank you very much, and it is a great honor for me to speak here. It's difficult to express my experience I learned from Thurston, and when I started Dynamics, I learned from Milner Thurston's paper, or it was preprint. It was about the kneading theory, and it was explained in Tanley's lecture this morning. Okay, and then later I learned this theorem about the complex dynamics, which I'm going to talk about. But I wanted to do a lot of things, but it was a little bit frustrating that we didn't make much progress. So what I thought it was next problems, like 20 years ago, they are still next problems. And so I have to talk a lot about what was previously known. Okay. So today I'm focusing on one theorem of Thurston about characterization of rational maps among a self-branched covering of two spheres. This is more like a single purpose talk. And this is my focus on the talk. And I try to say something about what's next in this field. So when I was contacted by organizers, I thought it's a conference for Thurston, and the title was "What's Next?" And it was kind of scary. What can I talk about in this conference? And so it was even intimidating for me. So I thank organizers for what they are doing to me. And also, I thank them for having this panel session yesterday for communicating mathematics and so raising the bar for the talks. but I have to do what I can do, so let me talk about this theorem. Okay. I'll explain the correct statement later, but let me state vaguely what I'm going to talk about. That's about the dynamical systems, and it's a mapping from S2 to S2, and with branch covering, say orientation preserving branch covering with some kind of finiteness condition called the post-critically finite, or just say PCF condition. And then we'll define the equivalence among those dynamics, which is essentially the conjugacy up to isotopy. And the question is whether this is equivalent to a rational map. And then the answer was characterized in terms of the action of this map on the space of simple closed curves. And this is essentially what I'm going to talk about. Okay, and then I try to say something about the idea of the proof and its connection to the Teichmuller space. And I try to mention some applications of his theorem, especially its role in looking at the parameter space of, say, quadratic polynomials, the Mandelbrot set. And then the rigidity question, the monotonistic questions, and then I turn to the question of matings, which is a way to construct a complicated branch covering starting from a pair of polynomials. And there are some further development around this theorem, and at the end, I try to say something about what's next. So before going into this discussion about this particular theorem, I try to discuss a little bit about understanding the dynamical systems. For example, if you are interested in a simple map, like z goes to z squared plus c, you can just pick a parameter and ask what happens to this dynamics. Okay. Or for real dynamics, you can just look at like a 0-1 interval and pick a parameter, say a equals 3.a, and then ask what happens to this dynamics. What are the typical behavior of orbits? Okay. In some cases, we can give an answer to this question. For example, here's some list of this complex polynomials. Sometimes we know that the invariant set called the Julia set is a Cantor set or some connected set. And well, this is a fractal set, but we can give a description of its topology in some cases. So in this case, it's a totally disconnected set and Cantor set. In this case, it's called the Duades rabbit, where you have a attracting cycle, and it's based in here. And the boundary is the Julia set, on which the dynamics chaotic. And there's another set, another Julia set, where you still have a periodic orbit of attracting periodic orbit of period 3, and the topology is different. And this is a case where you don't have attracting cycles, but the Julia set is fractal, and it's called the dendrite. And this is another example where you have parabolic cycles around here. So this I call a Duades-like rabbit. Okay. And well, so some cases we can give definite answer to the structure or the what happens in the dynamical plane, but this is not always the case. Because for example, I think for this particular parameter for real maps, it's difficult to see what's happening. So when you have attracting cycles, it's rather easy once you iterate enough that you can capture what's happening there, and it's in a sense robust, so you can say something concrete about this. But if you don't find such a orbit, then it's difficult to say something about this dynamics. So sometimes, so it's easy to give these examples of dynamics in general, but not always easy to answer the question about the dynamics. So it is often important to ask the right question. So for example, in this case, what I wanted to say is that they are called hyperbolic. So in this case, you have only two critical points, infinity and zero. Infinity is attracting fixed point, and the one in question is a zero. And if all these critical points are attracted to attracting periodic orbit, then we know more or less understand completely. So it's topological structure or structural stability or, and so on. But some other questions like this one, it's not so easy to answer. So in that sense, well, it may be not be possible to answer directly this type of questions. So maybe when you can't answer some questions, you change the questions, okay? So for example, in this setting, you may try to see, not for particular parameter, but you ask a question like, what can you say about whole space of dynamics of within this class? So what's the possible dynamics among this class of dynamics, and maybe it's difficult to relate to the particular parameters, but you say something about the whole correction of the dynamics. Okay, somehow it's necessary to change the question in this setting. And the organizer of this conference had a clever way of asking questions, like what's next. Now, let me go back to the question of holomorphic dynamics. So in a sense, initially people were interested in the dynamics of analytic functions, but Bill Thurston was asking a question not particularly only on these holomorphic maps, but in the class of branch recoupling, topological branch recoupling. So it's locally z equals to z to the k, and generally I'm considering the case where the degree is higher than 1. That means there can be a critical point where this k is greater than or equal to 2. So in general, when you have such a branch covering, you may have a critical point. Okay, and then the post-critical set is defined to be the forward orbit of those critical points. So in general, this can be an infinite set, but here we are going to assume that this set happens to be a finite set. So this condition is called a post-critically finite, or PCF. And throughout my talk, I'm assuming that the branch covering our question satisfy this PCF condition, this finiteness condition. So here, among these branch recovering, so there are lots of branch recovering, so you can't deal all of them in a sense that you have to classify them by some equivalence relation. So here is a definition of equivalence relations. So suppose you have two such branch recoverings. So both of them have this post-critical set, and I assume that this set is finite. Then they are equivalent, they're said to be equivalent if you can find two orientation-preserving homeomorphisms going this way and this way, and they are not equal. If they were equal, this will give you the conjugacy. That's a basic equivalence relation in dynamics, but they are not necessarily equal, but they are isotopic. More precisely, they send this post-critical set on this side to the post-critical set on the other side, and they agree on that post-critical set, and they are isotopic relative to this post-critical set. Okay. So when this happens, we say that the two maps like that are equivalent, or Thurston equivalent. Okay. So the question Thurston asked was given such a map, when is it equivalent to a rational map? The rational map, of course, suppose you identify S2 with the Riemann sphere, and then rational map naturally defines this branch covering. And well, if you can find the rational map of this category with this equivalence relation, you are happy. So if you are only studying the complex dynamics, you may tend to look at holomorphic mapping themselves, but it is Bill Thurston's ingenuity that he look at LIDAR category and ask this type of question. Okay, and it was important also to study the complex analytic maps themselves. And I try to mention how you can apply this type of question. Okay, so well, normally, well, when we give math talk, you give a statement of theorem and then try to prove or give an idea of the proof. But here, I tried it backward. So I start with the idea of the proof without stating the precise statement. But then after the giving idea, I try to formulate what is the statement. Okay. So it is important idea to relate this question to the Teichmüller space, or maybe I should say backwards. So there was this formulation in Teichmüller space, and then that's why we have this question and this definition of equivalence relations. Okay, so just to recall what was the Teichmüller space, there are many ways to represent the Teichmüller space, so I want to fix one way of viewing it. Okay, so suppose you have a surface, say which is oriented and say hyperbolic with a hyperbolic structure, and then its Teichmüller space is defined by the set of pairs of Riemann surface and the homeomorphism from this fixed base surface onto this Riemann surface, and then up to the equivalence relation, where equivalence relation is defined like this. So suppose you have, say here is another thing I wrote. So there's a base surface here. Suppose you have two objects like this, and then you try to compose this way and this way, you get a homeomorphism sending S1 to S2. Then for the equivalence, I require that this is isotopic to a conformal mapping. So essentially, Teichmüller space, as you know, this is a space of a complex structure given to this base surface together with the marking. Okay. So if you forget about this homeomorphism, you get the moduli space. So it naturally comes with a complex structure, and it comes with what's called a Teichmüller metric. The Teichmüller metric is complete, and it has a nice property which I'll mention soon. Okay. So now, going back to the question I started with, suppose you have this finiteness, the branch covering with this finiteness condition, the post-critical finite. So it's post-critical set. The forward orbit of critical points is finite. So suppose its number of post-critical set is greater than or equal to 5 for simplicity. The less than less than or equal to 4, it's an exceptional case. You have to, in a sense, treat separately. But for generic case, I always assume this condition. So when I define the Teichmüller space, I use this Esta to be the S2 minus this post-critical set. So since this is a finite set, it's a finite punctured sphere. But you can also think that this is S2 with n marked points. Okay. I use both views. Okay. Then on the Teichmüller space, you can define a mapping from Teichmüller space to itself, given the mapping F, okay, of this form. Okay, so it's defined as follows. So this branch covering is given, and if you pick a point in the Teichmüller space and it's in the equivalence class of this form. And Esta is either the S2 with a puncture defined by this post-critical set, or just consider S2 with just marked points. So instead of having this S, arbitrary Riemann surface, whenever you have this mapping, you can just identify this Riemann sphere with finite point removed, or you can just say that you are sending this marked points to the marked points on that side. So it's a theta 1. So whenever you say that you want, if you want to interpret this way, you just remove the marked points from the image. So locally, except at the branched point, it's a local homeomorphism onto S2 and then to the C hat. So it gives you a local complex structure on S2 here, except at the critical points. So you get, well, except at the finite point, you get the complex structure. So you now get a new complex structure which is identified with the Riemann surface gain, a Riemann sphere gain. Okay? And so if you define this way, naturally the mapping from here to here should be holomorphic because this complex structure was defined through this one. So it gives you a holomorphic mapping or a rational map from C hat to C hat. And this depends on the choice of this initial point in the Teichmüller space. Okay, so once you have this, then you try to change this map within the equivalence class defined here. Then you can realize that this, whenever you have an isotopy, you can lift to the isotopy here. That means it defines the mapping on the equivalence class. So that's a Sarstone's map acting on the Teichmüller space. So once you are given this such a map, you are given the mapping, the self-map of the Teichmüller space. Okay, and then the previous question I asked whether this can be a equivalent to a rational map can be reformulated in terms of this setting. So in fact, this is equivalent to a rational map if and only if the sigma f has a fixed point. Why? Because if these two are equivalent, it's nothing but the equivalence relation between f and this holomorphic mapping. So that means you find the holomorphic mapping or rational map within this equivalence class. And you can go backward when it is equivalent to holomorphic mapping, then you have this relation, so on. So it's nothing but the fixed point problems. So we already heard that, Thurston said, always look for the fixed point. And this is a case that you translate everything into the fixed point question. Okay. And well, so this is about the branch coupling, but of course there are there is earlier work by Thurston on the classification of surface homeomorphisms, and there he also considered the action of surface homeomorphism on the type mirror space, and classified according to the its property, whether you have a fixed point in the interior or boundary and so on. So in the speed, this is.
Can I just ask
yes. Yeah, well, it also depends on some normalization, but essentially whenever you give a f theta 1, you get both theta 2 and this one. So I didn't specify how you normalize, and it depends on the normalization, because there is an ambiguity of post-composing Möbius map here. But once you fix that, it almost automatically comes from theta 1. You can. Well, for example, I'll be showing you the example of a quadratic case, and in that case, you have only two critical values, and once you fix where these critical values, then you almost automatically define this one. Okay. And anyway, another way it says that theta 2 is already defined by theta 1, so it's both dependent on theta 1. That can I continue?
Yes.
Okay.
So
with this map, is it just I have this branched cover, and whenever I have a sort of a topological branched cover?
Yeah, you start with a topological branched cover.
And whenever I have that, I can pull back. I get a map on Teichmuller space, which is like I've got a metric here, and I just sort of pull back the metric by
yes.
Branch cover.
And defines a class of conformal structure. And it is defined, gives you the well-defined mapping from here to there, and that's the mapping on the Teichmuller space. Yeah, so this is a kind of crucial step, and I think I drew it on the blackboard, but let me draw it again. So I'll come back to this one again, and since the screen will go away, so let me just record it here. So it's important that this is a given data, and this is what you get. And this is a holomorphic mapping. Okay. And as I said, the question I mentioned at the beginning is formulated in terms of the fixed point problem of this map on the Teichmuller space. Okay. So once you have a mapping, self-mapping on the Teichmuller space, and well, I said that there's a complex structure on Teichmuller space, and by definition, it's naturally holomorphic. The sigma f is holomorphic in Teichmuller space. So when you have a holomorphic mapping between the Teichmuller spaces, then it is either isometric or non-uniformly contracting. So this is like a Schwarz lemma or a Pick theorem when you have a two disk, hyperbolic disk. And the Poincaré metric, whenever you have a holomorphic mapping from disk to disk, then it's either isometric, which means maybe it's transformation, or it's contracting. Maybe not uniformly, but non-uniformly contracting. So Teichmuller space shares the same property as this Poincaré disk for this respect. And also, this kind of contracting property was used in Yair Minsky's talk on the skinning map, where he also had a mapping from Teichmuller space to itself. The slight difference is that here, you, in general, you don't have uniform contraction. So whether you have a fixed point or not is a delicate problem. So in fact, this is a general theorem, but in fact, in this setting, you can show directly that in fact the sigma f from Teichmuller space itself is non-uniformly contracting. So under the assumption that the PF has at least 5 points, then the isometric case can never occur, and essentially it's a contraction, non-uniform contraction in the Teichner space. So it's likely to have a fixed point, but it is not uniform contraction. So if you restrict to some subset, it can be contracting. So as I mentioned, that when you define the Teichner space, if you forget the marking or this homeomorphism, you get a space of all conformal structures, and that's a moduli space. Okay, just to forget the theta. And then in the moduli space, if you take a compact subset and take its inverse image here, then on this set, you can show that the contraction is uniform. Okay, in fact, well, there are more detailed expression is that you can consider that the cotangent space of Teichner space is like a space of holomorphic quadratic differentials, which are integrable. Then the cotangent map defined by this sigma f is like a push forward for a quadratic differential. Well, if you have a quadratic differential, if you just take absolute value, you get the just a positive measure. And push forward for positive measure is pushing forward the measure, and it preserves the total measure. But if you have a quadratic differential, it's like a signed measure or a C-valued measure. So there is a chance that there are cancellations. And in fact, under my assumption, it does happen. So that means when you have this case, then the norm of quadratic differential will be decreased when you apply this push-forward map for Q, say, not zero. Okay, so that is a contraction at the level of cotangent space, and that introduces this contraction, non-uniform contraction in the Teichner space. Okay, so what's the conclusion? So maybe you, since it's a contraction, with contraction, you may have a fixed point. But there's another possibility that it doesn't have a contraction, then you have to tend to the boundary, okay? Moreover, from this property that on a compact set in moduli space, then the contraction is uniform. So it is necessary that if it's not converging to the fixed point, you have to converge in the moduli space to the boundary. Okay, so this is two possible statements. And the first case A, when you have fixed point, as I mentioned, it is equivalent to say that the branch covering F is equivalent to a rational map. So what we want to do from now is to characterize this case, so the escaping case. Okay? And eventually, I'm going to characterize this in terms of the curve, simple closure curve in a complement. Okay. So before going to continuing the proof, let me try to show you how to implement this iteration in the Teichner space. So this is due to Hubbard, and they implemented for classic Mac OS, and I had to write myself for Mac OS 10. But there's a paper by Hubbard and Dirk Schleicher. Okay, so it is for degree 2 topological polynomial. By topological polynomial, I mean that there's a specific point on the sphere so that the inverse image of this point is infinity itself. Okay, it's like a polynomial. And so infinity is in the post-critical set. And suppose you have post-critical points which are not infinity, then label them by x1 up to xn. Now this time, PF has an n plus 1 element. As I said, that the Teichner space is essentially the complex structure for the base surface together with some marking. Okay. So in this case, when you have S2 with some marking, then its structure gives you a Riemann sphere together with the marked points. But you also need a way to mark the, record the marking of this Teichner point. And it was done by giving isotropy classes of this joint arc joining these points to the infinity. So this is a picture from their paper. So, well, this is why it's called a spider. So suppose there's an infinity here and other points here, so they're going to specify x from infinity to these points xk, so the complement will be simply connected. So once you specify these data, then there's a unique way to specify this S and H. The S is determined by this point, sphere with this point. So that's the way they visualize a point in the Teichmüller space. Okay? Then try to give an example of this topological polynomial. It is encoded by the rational angle on the rational angle theta. So suppose you have theta like this, then if you iterate the doubling map, then it is periodic, either periodic or map onto the periodic angle. So if you take a theta, double to theta, four theta, and so on, you get the point. So here I prepared the unit circle and the point corresponding to the theta, two theta, and so on. And I draw these, say, spider legs corresponding to this one to the infinity. Okay, I put extra ones which correspond to the half of this angle. There are two halves for this map. So half this one and this one, I join them by this line going through the origin. Okay, so here, most of the places I want to use this doubling map, but I want to modify the map around this arc so that well, this point is not mapped to the zero itself, but it's mapped to this one, so that this point becomes a critical value. Okay, and when this theta is periodic, you have to modify so that one of them will be in this orbit. But anyway, you modify the map so that this realizes the orbit of critical value. Okay, and then when you try to do this algorithm, so once you give this data, the spider data here, you have to give a way to kind of lift this structure to the next level. And then doing this is essentially you are taking inverse images. Inverse images, especially when you have a critical value here, you take the quadratic polynomial, say monic quadratic polynomial, which has a critical value here, then each leg would have two inverse images. And you have to choose one of the legs, two inverse images, so that it is consistent with this configuration, the circular cyclic order of these angles. And for example, inverse image of this leg, well, if you just take inverse image, you may have two inverse images like this one, but according to the initial data, I just forget about this one and pick this one. So this is the process you continue when you apply. And in fact, if you do this, you get more information, not just iteration in Teichmüller space, but information about the externalizers and so on. So here's an example. So I didn't draw this red ones. It should go through somewhere here. And I modify the map so that the critical point goes to the critical value, which is somewhere here, which has an angle, 1/5. And then I apply this substance algorithm, sigma f, so that I take an inverse image of this one by the quadratic polynomial with a specified critical value. And I choose the right inverse image, this one. So now the inverse images are not the straight lines, and you get a little bit of curved arcs. And these points are new end points of the legs. And I have a new legs in here. And I can lift this one. This is, again, the next second image of sigma f, and so on. And if you continue this, somehow it converges. Well, according to the definition, I don't have to really take the inverse image of these arcs. I just need to take the isotopic classes. But just for convenience, I'm taking real inverse images. So once it is stabilized, it seems like it is converging in the Teichmüller space. And I can draw the Julia set for this one. Okay. So you can do something like this for other parameters. Let me show you some of them. I change the initial value, 1, 6, and try to do this. then it seems to be stabilizing like this. So z, this is z square plus I. So that's totally, it's nothing to do with this algorithm. So once you fix the, you think it's, you find the parameter, then I use the usual way of drawing the Julia set. This case, I take just inverse images of a point. Okay. Just to show that it's, it has something which you think you are, it's there. So, so drawing Julia set is not a part of this program. Okay. Let me show you some other angles. Okay, now it's going like this. In this case, it's a periodic angle, and it converges to the real parameter. Okay, and one more thing before switch back, 956. Okay, and lift. Well, here you can see, initially I had the different endpoints, but somehow they are converging to the same point. And this happens from time to time. So in that sense, it's not really converging in the time finite space, but somehow it's converging in some space. So, and eventually what you get is something like this. Okay, well, I can do this, well, it's better. Okay, so actually it was impossible to implement those Sussman iteration for the case of quadratic maps, and it does seem to be converging in some cases. Okay. Let me switch back to the slide.
Are there bad initial conditions?
Sorry?
Are there bad starting configurations?
Well, so this, since it is contracting, it doesn't really matter where you start with. So when one orbit converges to the fixed point, then every orbit converges because it was kind of contraction. Well, it was non-uniform, but once you have a fixed point, everything converges. And then if it doesn't have a fixed point, it goes away to the boundary of time and space. So that's a virtue of having a contraction on this space.
But so for your program, everything,
Well, not in the time finite space as is mentioned. If the endpoints of the legs are converging toward the same point, that means in time finite space you're going far away, but somehow it's converging, spitting out some parameter for which you can draw the Julia set. There's a way to kind of modify the map so that it has a fixed point. Well, that's coming next. This. And by the way, the legs were converging to the external rays of the limit dynamics. So what was the problem before? So I said that sigma f is a non-uniform contraction on the time finite space. So either it has a fixed point, hence the f is equivalent to a rational map, or it should converge to the boundary of the time finite space, or its projection to the moduli space should converge to the boundary. Okay. And what we want to do is to characterize this case B. Okay. So when this converges to the boundary in the moduli space, what does it mean? So, well, this is a kind of punctured sphere. So converging, diverging in the moduli space is like some points are coalescing to the group of points. So in some sense, it's developing the sphere into some shape like, so these blue points are this post-critical set, the marked points. And if they are diverging in the moduli space, it should necessarily develop some, say, annulus or cylinder or tube that separate this collection of post-critical points. So metrically, it should look like this picture. So here you have a curve, or cylinder, or curve, which are disjoint and not homotopic to zero, or not homotopic to puncture. Okay, so they can be represented by these core curves for each cylinder. And when you start with the map, so the sigma f was not expanding the metric. So that means as you iterate this sequence, the consecutive distance does not increase. So each time when this is extending the boundary, in a sense, this is also close to the same boundary. So that means once you develop this type of degeneration, the next one also has a similar degeneration. So in this sense, this decomposition or this collection of multi-curve stabilizes on the sphere. Okay. And more about this multi-curve. So I just erased this one. And suppose you have this collection of curves. So now you have only one tube here somehow. And for each curve from this multi-curve, you associate, suppose you have this type of cylinder or annulus. And suppose you have each one has modulus, say, M gamma. Okay. Then try to see what happens to this modulus. Okay. So what was the modulus when you have a cylinder like this with the length here is 1 and height is M, then the modulus of this annulus was M. Okay. There are basic things about annuli. So suppose you have a big annulus here, and inside there are these essential annuli, like A1 and A2, with moduli M1 and M2, then there's a so-called Grotch inequality, which says that the modulus of the big one is bigger than or equal to the sum of the moduli of these small ones. Okay? And there's one more thing. It's easy from the definition that when you have two annuli and a covering of degree k, then the modulus is multiplied by this degree k. So the image modulus has a k times the modulus of A1. Okay. So suppose in this picture, have a mapping from this cylinder onto this cylinder onto that cylinder. That means one inverse image or component of inverse image is here, one inverse image is here. So if this is a covering map of the degree K1 and K2, then this small annulus here, you see, should have modulus M1 over K1 and so on because of this property. Then if you look at the total annulus here, joining this one, and something in the middle, just imagine that this part, when you map forward, some small tiny part will be stretched to this one. So there is something going on here, but just fill in to make a longer or a fatter annulus or longer cylinder. And suppose this modulus is M prime. Because of this Grotch inequality, what you get will be this modulus is greater than or equal to these two numbers. Okay. So this suggests that you define an operator on the space of a moduli for each annulus from this invariant morality curve, defined so that, for example, for this M prime, you just take all curve, the simple closed curve from this collection, and look for inverse image which is within this homotopy class. Okay, and then, so given a curve gamma, suppose this is a curve gamma, and look for all possible gamma here or here, so that the inverse image has a component which is homotopic to this one. Then, like this one, you divide by the mapping degree, and you divide the modulus vector from the image, and this will be the new modulus vector coming from this definition. Okay. And once you define this definition, it is a linear mapping from this space, the collection of this M gamma according to M in the capital gamma, and this is a matrix in a sense. So it's called the Sarston's matrix, and it has a non-negative entries, so there is a leading eigenvalue due to Perron-Frobenius theorem, and that's called the Sarston eigenvalue. Okay. So if for example, this lambda or this lambda gamma is greater than 1, That means when you iterate that process I mentioned, taking inverse image of the annuli, the modulus will grow to infinity. So eventually that will lead to this divergence in the moduli space already. So there's no way that you have a fixed point in the Teichner space. Okay? So it is easy to see that once you have this, then it goes to the boundary, no fixed point. The lambda equals one case is a little bit of, subtle, but you can just argue that you still have the point going to the boundary. You have to work more to show that if you have in control lambda less than one, then this cannot be in a sense obstruction, in a sense that you are going to this boundary point. And in fact, you eventually you cannot go there in the boundary, so you have to come back to this right in the middle where you have definite contraction, so you have to find the fixed point somewhere in the middle of Teichner space. So in these three cases, these two cases, you go to the boundary, no fixed point. In this case, there's a chance that you have find a fixed point. So in this way, you can characterize the non-existence of fixed point, that means case B, by the eigenvalue of this Thurston matrix. More precisely, if case B occurs, then if and only if there is a multi-curve such that lambda is greater than or equal to 1, and that's called the Thurston's obstruction. So after showing the idea, let me start the Thurston theorem, and the result itself was published by Duardi and Hubbard. Under the assumption I mentioned, it is equivalent to a rational map if and only if there is no Thurston obstruction in the form of multi-curve. So that means if there is no Thurston obstruction, even if you have an invariant multi-curve, the lambda must be less than 1. And there is another point that if you have fixed point, it has to be unique because it's a weak construction. So this gives you the uniqueness. If you have a rational map here, then it is unique up to a Möbius conjugation. So this is a rigidity result. Okay. So this is a statement of the Thurston theorem. So let me mention some applications. But so the Thurston theorem was characterized in terms of the multi-curve, but essentially his condition had to be checked for infinitely many collection of multi-curves. So that means you have to check for infinitely many objects, so it is in general not easy to carry out. Yes?
So you showed an example in which it went to infinity in calculus space, mm-hmm. and yet it converged.
Yeah.
So it seems that it goes to infinity, probably kind of pinching curve, right?
Yeah, right. So that case, one solution is you modify the initial map so that if you just put the same the legs so that they land on the same point. So modify the initial branch covering so that there were different points initially, but modify so that they land on the same point. So there's no danger that goes to the infinity. So there's an algorithm to how to modify. So that way you can just go to the fixed point.
So it's not like things are bubbling off. That something is actually disappearing? Is that?
Yeah, for this case, yes. But for general branch covering, there can be more drastic things can happen. OK. So there's a very specific type of Thurston obstruction. It's called the Levy cycle. So essentially, it's a cycle of simple closed curves, the disjoint. With the property that one has one inverse image and the mapping degree is 1 and it is homotopic to the previous one. So there's a cycle, essentially it's a periodic cycle and the mapping degree at each step is a degree 1. Once you have such a cycle, then you can just take all inverse images and that leads to the Thurston obstruction. Okay, so this is a very specific type of Thurston obstruction called Levy cycle. And for some low complexity case, you can just deduce that the existence of Sasson abstraction is equivalent to the existence of Levy cycle. This is true if F is a topological polynomial or the mapping has a degree 2. Okay. When you have this degree 1 mapping, it is easier to relate to the combinatorial condition. I don't have time to explain it. So from that condition, there are many ways to detect whether such a Levy cycle can exist compared to the general Sasson abstractions. And in particular for polynomial case, you can construct this branch covering starting from Haber trees, which is mentioned this morning, or the spiders, and check the non-existence of Sasson abstraction, or you modify, as I mentioned, if there is going to be a Sasson abstraction, you just modify initial map so that it avoids trivial Sasson abstraction. And it was done by Duarte and Hubbard for quadratic case and Alfred Poirier for all degree for polynomial or topological polynomial case. Okay. And what's the role in this Mandelbrot set? So Mandelbrot set is in the parameter space where for Z squared plus C, Julia set is connected. And the post-Grigori finite maps, implies that there are only countably many. And there's a continuous family of the maps, and there are only countably many post-critically finite maps. And why is it can be useful? Well, in a sense, they situate in the position which is very important. Okay, like these components were attracting a fixed point, attracting orbital period 2, 3, and so on. And for example, if you magnify here, somehow the Mandelbrot set is branching at this point, and this branching point is also a post-Grigori finite maps. So essentially, to describe the combinatorial structure of the Mandelbrot set, the post-Grigori finite maps are in the places where you have these components and center or these branching point. So Duarte and Hubbard described the Mandelbrot set in a combinatorial way, and its crucial point in the combinatorial discretion was that it was for post-Grigori finite maps. Well, they can deal with others, but in fact, this is a crucial point. And I think you don't really have to use a Sasson theorem, but it's much easier to think about those structures once you use a Sasson theorem. Another thing I want to mention is Monsonnici's theorem. I just learned that this was actually initial starting point for Sasson to study this type of the question. So take the real quadratic polynomials, as I mentioned at the beginning, and it is looks like when you vary the parameter, it looks like monotone. For this case, when you increase A, it's like a topological entropy is increasing. And it was conjectured at the beginning when Milner and Sasson wrote this preprint. But later, it was solved using this the rigidity part of Sasson theorem. Because among these real quadratic polynomials, if you represent them as by the symbol sequences for the critical point, there are a dense set of simple sequences which correspond to post-critically finite ones. And if you have a rigidity, it is easy to conclude the monotonicity. Because if you have a non-monotone map, then essentially you are going up and down, so you are crossing the same line several times. When you have a rigidity, you can't do that. Okay. And so this applies to this higher degree polynomial as long as you have even degree here, 4, 6, and so on. But the same question about the monotonicity is still open even for this, say, degree 3 or fractional degrees. And I think a lot of people have tried to do this using OV fold and so on, or comb manifold, but I don't think anybody have succeeded. So it will be interesting since it's so close and there's no obvious reason that this it shouldn't hold for this family, and it will be interesting. You have to kind of, in a sense, introduce some new idea to deal with these questions. Okay. Let me go to this mating question. So mating is a way to construct a branch covering starting from a pair of polynomials. before going to mating, whenever you have a polynomial with a connected Julia set, then there's a virtual coordinate which sends the complement of field Julia set into the complement of the disk. So there's a conjugacy here. Essentially, in the complement, you have a dynamics of z squared. So the straight line here is sent to external rays, and the angle is double in terms of virtual coordinate. Okay, so pick two such polynomials and just try to blow up the point at the infinity of the Riemann sphere into the circle at infinity. So this is not a complex analytic blow up, but you can just blow up so that you get the closed disk for two polynomials. Then at the circle at infinity, you have the dynamics like z equals to z squared. It's a doubling dynamics. So there you can glue two maps together along the boundary of the disks, and you get the new branch recovering map. And this is called a formal mating. And the question is when this formal mating is equivalent to a rational map. Suppose you start with a post-critically finite one. And once you have them, then the question is, well, there's another definition to try to make a mating. If you start with two maps, just take the field Julia set, take a union, and take the equivalence relation, just identifying some external ray, landing point of external ray with some angle, and the landing point of the opposite external angle for the other side. Okay, so this requires that you are essentially pasting two fractals and try to define something like a sphere. And it looks more strange, but in some cases you can do. The last one. So here I had a space. So I had this space for this definition because I blew up the infinity to the circle. So I have something in the middle. So I just gluing disks. But this one, I just forget about this complement. Only taking this field Julia set and glue them together. It's more drastic thing, okay? And the result is that for degree two case, you can completely characterize when you can do this, when they can be mateable, meaning the formal mating is equivalent to a rational map, and defined in terms of the limbs. So for example, when you take the parameter space, you see the Mandelbrot set and main cardioid where there's an attracting fixed point in these big regions. Then there are limbs, which called this is like a one half limb, one third limb, and so on. There are many things sticking out here, and you can parameterize by rational angles viewed from this cardioid. So that means if they don't belong to the conjugate limbs, like one third and two third, or one half and one half, then they are mateable. And even more, once you are able to define, not necessarily for degree two, but you can just conjugate to a rational map, not just the equivalence, but it is conjugacy to the rational map. So you can actually glue two field Julia set together. But unfortunately, if you start with a degree three, this type of the result is not always the case. So an example with Tan Lei says that there is a pair of cubic polynomials such that there is a certain abstraction, but the Levy cycle theorem doesn't hold, and it is abstracted, but topologically you can construct such a set, and still it's a branch covering of homeomorphic to S2, and it is a branch covering of S2. So the technique used here was the Levy cycle theorem, and it completely fails in the case of degree 3 or higher. How much time do I have?
One. Well, you're a couple minutes over.
Okay. So, okay, so the question was, well, I've been working on a long time, but there wasn't, except the degree 2 case, it was difficult to find, check whether two polynomials are mateable, and this is a question you can ask. So let me see. There were other questions, but there was one new approach given by Dylan Thurston. It was a different type of theorem. It is a more positive criterion and sufficient condition for branch coupling to be equivalent to a rational map. So this approach seems to be promising, and I want to see how it can be applied to the problem of mating or detecting the mateability of two polynomials. And so maybe one question, the one answer to the what next is next day's next session is Sun. Okay. Well, let me just show this slide, and since I'm over time, let me stop and say thank you very much. For my program, it is only for quadratic polynomial. And in the case of quadratic polynomial, in a sense, the abstraction is kind of harmless. So the only thing that can happen is that some of the legs that collapses, and once you modify them so that the branch recovery map, so that they are already collapsed from the beginning, it converges to the fixed point. So you never see the serious problems in this picture. But for the cubic example I mentioned, it is really a serious problem. And there was a movie I went to the show due to Arno Scheritter, which really shows how bad it can be.
Do you have that movie?
Yes. If you ask. Well, you know already.
Yeah, I know.
So this. The one I show now is due to Arno Scheritter, and I'm showing you this is a mateable case. So no degeneration, no going to the boundary. So it's not iterating this Thurston's algorithm, but the result at the end is the same. So you are starting with a two-field Julia set, but gradually approaching together and get together to obtain the Julia set of the new rational map at the end. So on one side it was dendro, the other side it was Gordy's rabbit. Okay, that's more or less fixed. This time it's interesting. It's a dendrite to dendrite, so no interior to start with, but somehow by gluing to those two sets without the interior, somehow you get the sphere together with the complex structure.
In that case, is it provable that you get spatial interred?
Yeah. Yes. Actually, there is a paper by Milner who worked on this these cases. How this space filling curve really fills the sphere. And this is the abstracted case.
In degree 3.
Somehow, these parts, structure here is kind of collapsing, and you don't see in the limit. So that essentially shows that it is abstracted and it's not converging to the limit.
I have another question. So
yep.
You did mention this big breakthrough
by Daniel Meyer that sort of shows a large class of rational maps, if not maybe virtual maps, in the sense that some iterate is evading. And there's been a lot of conjectures in three manifolds that have a similar sounding statement. I just wondered if you have any comments.
Well, I haven't really thought about it in that direction, so I don't know much about this. And also the question I was asking whether it can be realized in the space of rational maps. So if you're happy with the space of branched coverings, they are already there. So that's probably a difference from a different point of view.
Any other questions? Well, oh, yes.
About the algorithm, the mating algorithm, is this the source really breaking the spectral space?
Essentially, yes. Well, this one you have to, well, if you follow the definition, you have to take the isotopic class of these legs, but other than that, it's really iterating in the time-final space. That's the John Hubbard who formulated the time-final space in his way in terms of spiders. The film? Oh, that's, I think, different. So it's more like these, let me go back. Where was the picture? Here. So this picture, I took this circle at the infinity and glued them together. But instead, you can take a equipotential curve, which is a circle in here, and glue them together. So you cannot really introduce the dynamics, but you can define the space. Then if you lower the potential level, getting closer to the Julia set, then you get a different gluing. And I think this movie is a sequence of this different levels of gluing. And in the limit, it should be gluing between just the field of the Julia set. And is that correct? No. Right? But I thought it was equivalent.
It is equivalent. It is.
Okay.
It's much simpler in fact.
Okay. In some way you're interpreting the technical space.
Louder!
Somehow he was iterating in Kashmir space.
John, not everyone has your voice.
This is my question. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so in the second to the last slide of your talk, so for the future problems, you mentioned there's some connection with Nikoshevich note, let me see.
Previous
study and Nikoshevich's iterative monitoring group. Can you say more? So what?
Well, I'm not the specialist is in this one, but this originated from this twisted rabbit problem. So if you take this rabbit polynomial, which has a attracting period cycle, and then take a simple closed curve, and Hubbard wants to twist the neck of rabbit. And it is proven by this Levy cycle theorem that this is equivalent to a polynomial. Analytic polynomial, and the question was to determine what's the result you get. And Bartoldi and Nikoshevich work was essentially the result itself was to determine how many ten twists will imply what the result and so on. And for the iterated monomial group, I'm not a specialist, I cannot tell much, but this is a very strong tool to analyze all those cases for those type of branch coverings.
Could you just show your last slide for
one? Yeah. Sorry, I couldn't mention what's next, but well, if you allow me, let me just say one thing. So maybe one wants to give an estimate on the rate of contraction, or maybe distance to the fixed point, if you start with branched covering, which is close to holomorphic. like a quasi-regular map with small dilatation, QC dilatation. And if you're able to show that the fixed point is not too far from the original one, then you might be able to say that you have a map which is, you don't know how, what's happening, but you just modify the orbit of critical points so that it becomes periodic. And of course, you have to modify so that it is not analytic anymore, but you might be able to apply this Sarson's algorithm, sigma f, to arrive at the fixed point. So if you're able to estimate the distance in an effective way, you might be able to prove that hyperbolic maps are dense in the space of all rational maps or polynomials, which is still open even for degree two. And well, nobody have worked out in this way. And well, so far I don't have any good idea for this direction, but I thought it was interesting.
Well, let us retire for the day after thanking Mr. Wang.
Thank you very much.